right, Payne and Pendergast, at 8:25, we will list out the areas where our faith has been most shaken in the Texans so far through three games. Areas we thought were going to be good, maybe we're not feeling so hot about right now. But in the meantime, every Tuesday, 8 o'clock, now that the book is closed on week three, we can go back and look, and yeah, sure, the Texans lost 34-7 to the Vikings. We'll see how much the faith was shaken amongst experts at 9 o'clock when we power rank the power rankings. But this is not going to stop us from getting petty. We get petty on Tuesday this time every week. We take a look around the league, make fun of things that are worth making fun of. And typically, if anything goes wrong with Deshaun Watson, this is the segment, that this is the bucket that it'll get plunked down in here. The Browns are 1-2. And they have massive injuries along the offensive line. They might be without three of their starting offensive linemen. So it kind of gives Deshaun an excuse. I hate that because I think he's bad with or without the offensive linemen. Here was Deshaun trying to get work done against the Giants on Sunday.
Watson audibilizing at the line on a first and 10 at the Giant 44 with 7:50 to go. Giants up 21-15. Another draw fumbled by Ford. It's loose. And the Giants say they have it. It was a bad exchange between Ford and Watson. And the Giants say they have the football. Do the officials say they do? Yes.
Yeah, so a little fumble from Deshaun. He averaged 5.3 yards per attempt in that game.
And that was the one I think that Ford basically put on Watson at the end of the game, did he not? That
I can tell you, Deshaun skirted the hell out of it in his press conference. I can tell you that.
Yeah. I'll tell you, the funny thing about Deshaun since he's been in Cleveland is that he's had so many sloppy plays or sloppy turnovers, almost comical at times, that I don't recall him ever doing when he was with the Texans. To say nothing of how he's played as a quarterback or excuses you could have made, this, that, or the other. The play last year when Danico Autry, who at the time was with the Titans, was sacking Deshaun, and Deshaun just turned around and threw it backwards like 10 yards further behind the line of scrimmage and missed the running back. The running back was able to scoop it up to keep it from being a complete tragedy, but just really comically bad football plays by Deshaun Watson. There's nothing about his performance, I think, that a Browns fan would look at and say, well, yeah, he's right on the brink. He's just like, okay, we just got to figure this out or what have you. He looks like he's regressed back beyond something. It's not even a regression. I don't think he's ever been as bad at these comically bad football plays as he's been.
Well, and people are questioning his love of football. Does he even want to be there? He seems more like an Instagram influencer than he does a football player at this point.
Yeah.
They've in Cleveland, I can tell you, I listen to some Cleveland radio on Mondays just to see how things are going up there, especially after losses. And there is very much a Ken Carman's the morning host up there, and his whole thing on the open on Monday was, we got to stop talking about Deshaun, like 2020 Deshaun walking through that door. Like the Deshaun that had a bad offensive line, traded his best weapon, all these things, and he still threw for almost 5,000 yards. Like that guy's not coming back. He's not coming back.
It's got to be, it's almost like now he's turned into one of those nondescript quarterbacks that you wonder, like, all right, well, can we get by with this guy?
He's Gardner Minshew.
Right. I almost wanted to say, except this would be an insult to Andy Dalton to an extreme degree. You know, Andy Dalton, for a long time, they had that thing called the Dalton line, which was that quarterback that, like, all right, he's not really great, but you're winning football games with him, and he seems to get the job done. He's not even up. Like, it would be aspirational to say that maybe he could be as good as Andy Dalton when he was at his best. It's just, he's nowhere even close to that.
Because guys around that line, you debate about paying them. Right now, you know what I mean? Like right now, they're like, they're regretting that they paid Deshaun. Like that's the big thing.
He's not even early stage Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Right. You know, he's just bad.
He's just not a good quarterback.
Here's Deshaun after the game saying, do not bash his love for the game.
I'm never concerned. Like I said, I'm going to step on the field. Whoever's out there to file, I'm going to keep working. Sometimes it might go our way. Sometimes it's not. But if I'm standing up, I'm going to keep working. Regardless of what people think, what people say, who's out there, whatever it is. That's one thing you're not going to bash me with is my passion of the game and my work ethic and the way I compete. That's damn sure that.
He's got such rabbit ears, man. Like, he hears everything. Like, he's
That's what happens when you're on social media all the time.
Dude, he's so attuned to what people say about him. Like, it's,
you know, if you equate him to other, like, for what Deshaun could have been. All right, Kobe Bryant got himself into a very dicey situation as a young man when he was married, and it changed him after that. Yeah. And yet he remained the Kobe Bryant who was very much fueled and motivated to greatness.
Yes.
But also, you know, just also, you know, had to be sure he did right by his wife after that.
After
also
that, yeah. After
Deshaun, that. It seems like he's doing right by his girlfriend as hard as he can.
To an extreme degree, yeah. So
supports her in all of her social media career endeavors and everything. And yet on the football side of things, just completely falling apart.
Unbelievable.
You, sir, are no Kobe Bryant.
Yes.
No.
No, he is not. He is not. Will Levis, he threw a pick six this weekend.
From the 31, here's the snap. Quick throw, right sideline.
Yes! Intercepted. Down the left sideline. Jair Alexander. High stepping. End zone. Touchdown. Jair Alexander. And the Packers lead it 16-7. Holy cow.
All right, man.
You know who's still committed to Will Levis is Pete Prisco. He's convinced that Will Levis is just he doesn't have any talent or support around him, and that's why this, that, the other thing. There's no excuse for some of the stuff that Will Levis does on a football field.
No,
he does so many stupid things with such regularity that many other great. Other good quarterbacks have not had ideal circumstances, and they manage not to do seven stupid things per game. I'm baffled, honestly. I don't know what it is, if it's personal pride or ego or something. Some people want to stick by their pre-draft assessments of Will Levis, but man, every bad thing that Will Levis could have been by his pre-draft assessment, I feel like he's showing it in droves.
No doubt.
Just, you got to let it go, man.
No doubt.
I hope the Titans don't let it go.
No.
I hope they continue to see good things.
Dude,
in him.
I hope they Trevor Lawrence him and give him a second contract. Do it. Bill Belichick, as we get petty, this is as petty as it gets for me, but if you're going to make fun of a former employer, and I know Bill Belichick was only a New York Jet employee for like 24 hours before he shifted gears and said, nah, I'm going to go coach the Patriots instead.
Wrote his resignation on a napkin.
Yeah, pretty much.
No, he did, literally.
Did he really?
I thought that was the story, yeah. He basically wrote it on a napkin, his official resignation letter. Yeah.
Yeah. This was Bill Belichick on the Pat McAfee show yesterday, talking about Sam Darnold, and tries to take a shot at the Jets here.
You know, but I'll say this. Everybody has liked Darnold except the Jets. The people in Carolina that I talked to, they really liked him. He was, you know, at the Rams and not for very long. They liked him. I think they want to re-sign him. You know, he was looking for more of an opportunity than to play behind Stafford. And then, I know that Kevin and some of the coaches in Minnesota, they really like this guy too. So it seemed like the only people that didn't like Darnold were at the Jets.
Yeah, okay, I get it. That's a little subtle shade at the Jets. You guys have probably had a thing going for 20 years now. If you're going to throw shade, old man, you got to get your facts straight. Like, Darnold, you're thinking of Baker Mayfield. When he said the Rams and he backing up Matt Stafford, that was not – Sam Darnold has never been a Ram.
Right, but he was still talking about Sam Darnold the whole time. He just mixed up that little part of it.
A little part of it where he was definitely...
Well, no, but you know what? Honestly, I think he meant the 49ers. I think he probably...
He said Matt Stafford.
Right, yeah, I know. But in his mind, he was kind of like conflating like the whole...
I'm not going to let you take up for Belichick in the petty cast. You can do it at 8:30.
His large point, he didn't completely confuse the player. In his, listen, Sean, Belichick and I, our brains operate very similarly. People say that all the time. In your mind, you're thinking of like some, because Sam Darnold went out and was a backup to Purdy with the 49ers, and that was good for him. In Belichick's mind, he has that in the bucket of the Shanahan tree out there in L.A. And he just kind of, or out there in California, and he just kind of flipped it in his mind for a second.
I know what he did.
The overall argument was okay.
I know what he did, but if you're going to do it while throwing shade at the Jets, you got to get it right. Like, I'll allow it just through the course of the show while he's on with McAfee, but if you're going to do it while you're trying to make a joke about the New York, I will not stand for him making fun of the New York Jets and conflating Baker Mayfield with Sam Darnold.
January 4th, 2000, Bill Belichick, as he approached the podium to be introduced as the Jets' new head coach, Belichick grabbed a pen and a napkin and scribbled a note, "I resign as head coach of the New York
Jets."
That's
amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. You know, now I feel bad. Like, that's a bold move right there.
And then he gave up. It was a long press conference, too. Yeah. I went back and revisited this a couple years ago. I remember it was a crazy moment in NFL
history. I think it pops up in that Dynasty like docuseries they did on Apple TV about the Patriots.
Yeah.
Because that's how he wound up there with the Patriots. All right, two more here. Pettycast. Here's Antonio Pierce after the loss to the Panthers. They got blown out at home by the Panthers. Imagine that. A week after beating the Ravens in Baltimore, you come back home to Vegas and you lose to the Carolina Panthers. Granted, it was Andy Dalton, not Bryce Young. But here was Pierce about his players after the game.
The team just didn't seem to show up tonight.
No, they didn't. I think as the game went on, I don't think it was a team. I think there was definitely some individuals that made business decisions. And we'll make business decisions going forward as well.
All right. So Antonio Pierce, I mean, I think, honestly, Seth, I think that's what people wanted D'Amico Ryans to say about Laremy Tunsil.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
We got guys out there making business decisions.
Yeah.
We'll make business decisions too. D'Amico's trying to establish a culture, says things that he genuinely and truly believes, and yet at the same time, there's one guy that, man, just does not fit the culture of the D'Amico Ryans Houston Texans, and it's Laremy Tunsil, who you also choose to D'Amico Ryans didn't choose to reward Laremy Tunsil financially the way he's being rewarded, and yet, man, it's a big glaring issue when you're trying to establish a culture.
Yeah.
And it's an issue on establishing a culture on an offensive line that right now is completely and totally inept in their run blocking.
A lot of people saying that Davante Adams was who Antonio Pierce was referring to, because apparently he was moping on the bench throughout most of the second half and late second quarter, and during the second half of that game, Davante Adams looked like he wanted to be anywhere other than in a Raiders uniform.
It's the hard thing about pro football, though, too, is that, man, like it is with the Texans and Laremy Tunsil right now, it's, all right, boy, you'd love to live by your credo and everything, and you'd love to, you know, if Antonio Pierce wanted to cut Davante Adams or somebody on the spot, then that might be the right thing to do in his mind, and yet you're financially constrained.
Big time.
It's really hard to do those things.
Big
Laremy
time.
Tunsil, if you want to make an example out of Laremy Tunsil somehow, it's a $50 million dead cap hit, and it's just about damn near impossible to do, or you'd have to get really, really, really creative. It's hard to always make the what you want to do based on your ideology.
Yes. Last one here, Pettycast. Micah Parsons. He loves the Texans. This was Micah on his podcast last week.
They're playing elite defense as well as elite offense. I mean, Coach Ryan, what he's doing over there, he's special, bro. I've been watching them, man. Them young cats is hooping, but they got Stingley. That Texans team is going to be a deep playoff run team, man, especially how TJ's playing, that defense is playing. It's going to be special.
Okay, I know it sounds like he's like chopping things with his hand, karate style. There were graphics on that video, which were Micah, stay the hell away from the Texans. You said that before this Vikings game. I'm putting this Vikings loss on Micah Parsons. They're hooping, all those young guys, and D'Amico this and D'Amico that. Stop campaigning to be on the Texans. We've got two defensive ends already. Their names are Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson Jr. Honestly, of all the players, I don't want Micah Parsons anywhere near the Texans. For what it would cost to get him, no.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, and there's no way. I mean, the Texans, it's not like there's no way they would trade for Micah Parsons or something right now.
No chance.
Because a Micah Parsons trade is very much in the cards if the Cowboys don't turn it around real quickly. Because it's really hard to pay three top guys top of the market money, and they'd have CeeDee Lamb already under contract. They've got Dak Prescott under contract. The Cowboys probably are not going to pay Micah Parsons, and if they're 2-6 come trade deadline or something, I think there's a really good chance he gets traded. The Texans already have so much money and draft picks invested in their defensive line. I don't think they're going to do it.
No, yeah, I mean, I know he'll never be a Texan. I just don't need him talking about the Texans. He was out there.
Now, I do think he genuinely believes all those things he just said. He spent the entire offseason palling it up with CJ Stroud.
Yeah,
CJ gave good word of mouth on the Texans.
I agree. Text message. More than suite tickets, because we just gave away Texans tickets in the previous hour. More than suite tickets, I would love to watch a game with Seth. That would be pure entertainment and someone who could yell with me. You're pretty quiet back there on your sofa during the game the other day.
Other than your kolache incidents. I'm trying to. It's hard. Football's a hard. Sean, you know the problem with my brain. I was joking, obviously, about it being like Bill Belichick. Is that my brain is a constant battle to pick one of 20 thoughts that I'm having.
It is.
At any given moment. It really, really is. And it's really hard.
The metaphor for your brain is one person chasing 20 chickens at the same time.
Yeah, and it's really, I mean, and they're usually, I would say 18 out of the 20 ideas are brilliant ideas, but you got to choose one.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me. So when I'm watching a football game, and you've got 22 players out there all doing these things. For me to just try to figure out exactly what's the most, it's hard for me. You don't want to watch a game with me. You don't want to watch a game with me.
I disagree. I'll be honest with you. The most fun thing in this job, like there are so many times in this job where I'm like, man, there are people who would pay like in an auction to do these things that we get to do sometimes.
Yeah.
The one big thing is when I got, like, I would watch games with Ted when he was here. I watched games with Clint. You and I watch games together from time to time. Like, I love watching games with former football players because you get their perspective. It's like watching a director's cut of a game. You know what I mean? Like, it's,
yeah.
I think it's so fun, man. Like, that's my favorite thing. I know it's, you're corralling all these things in your brain, but for a regular dude like me, that's why I tell people all the time, the game day stuff is my favorite stuff because I'm sitting in the press box with you watching the game on home games. I'm watching with Clint up here in the theater room that we've got during the road games and stuff. Like, it's super fun for me.
You know what's hard, though, too, is I think it's hard watching the TV copy because you're trying to figure out exactly what's going on. And it stinks because the more high-profile a game it is, the harder it is to figure things out because they've got more cameras. They tend to be, like, focused in on an even smaller area of the field. And there's times where you're like, oh, my God, I wish I could see what they're doing in coverage right now because you have no idea whether the quarterback's making the right decision or not, you know? So it's really frustrating when you're watching on TV to know who to get angry at.
Yeah.
I just want to know who to be angry at here, but I can't.
It's easier at home games. It's easier at home games where we're watching with our own eyes. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. That was the Pettycast. We'll do the power ranking of the power rankings at the top of the hour. How much has the faith been shaken with the Texans with the national media? We'll find out in about 40 minutes. How much has our faith been shaken with specific things with the Texans? We've got the list. We'll go through it with you. Next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Where has our...
Real quick apology. I did it again. I didn't stay petty throughout the whole Pettycast. I apologize.
Yeah,
multiple
that was...
people pointing that out. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's... Yeah, you got lost in the moment of defending Belichick, which you constantly do. It's very annoying off the air. Seth is always defending Bill Belichick. No, you got to stay petty during the Pettycast.
Belichick is on a podcast with Michael Lombardi right now. Michael Lombardi, who blocked me on X, and
what?
I think he blocked me. I don't know. I was going through every now and then. I go through who I've blocked, and just in case. Sometimes, man, I get a hair trigger on game days. Some days I'm just like somebody says something that just like mildly annoys me, and I'm like, ah, screw this guy, and I block him.
Yeah.
So I go back through and be like, oh, wait a second, why did I make this decision? And I realize that. I realized I blocked Michael Lombardi, but I think it's because I realized that he had blocked me at some point.
Okay.
So I don't know why.
Wow. Okay. I mean, you used to have him on your old Deceptively Fast podcast back in the day.
Yeah, something went, you know, when he put out the report that the Texans might fire Nick Caserio. Or however he had framed it a couple years ago.
Yeah, was it fire? Or was he talking about Caserio maybe leaving and going back?
He might end up back in New England, whatever it was. Yeah. I think I kind of had a hot... It bothered me the way that all went down, and I think he probably saw what I had tweeted out. And then,
okay.
So I get it. I get it if he blocked me. But I counter-blocked him just in case he ever...
No, that's a good job by you.
In case he ever wants to come back and follow me. It'll be sitting there waiting there. Yeah,
that's right. Where has our faith been shaken with the Houston Texans three games in? Now granted, they're 2-1. You know, there's a lot of teams around the league that would be that are envious of the position the Texans are in. 2-1, and you got Jacksonville coming to town this weekend, so they should be 3-1 when next Monday rolls around. Where has your faith been most shaken in the Houston Texans, Seth?
I guess
first three games.
Okay, if we're talking about this is a faith-based exercise. I would, this is tough. I have the least faith in the offensive line right now. So I guess but I didn't really trust them that much. I was excited about them after the first game. Then it turns out the Colts just suck.
Yeah.
But I was encouraged by the performance by the offensive lineman in the first game. But I would say, I think I went from agnostic to atheist on this one. That's agnostic about the offensive line, but now I'm just flat. I'm full-blown atheist.
Right.
If they put in a bad performance versus the Jaguars, I'll be a damn Satanist, man. What the hell, offensive line? And some people will point out, as Ross Tucker did earlier, that, hey, that Vikings defense has made every offensive line look bad. The 49ers didn't seem to have any answers for that Vikings defense. The 49ers did run the ball. They were able to move the ball versus the Vikings defense. The Texans offensive line looked pathetic, paltry, putrid, any P word you want to use, piss poor, all of those things. They were really bad in run blocking, and just Laremy Tunsil having 5 penalties in that game. I am a downright atheist about the Texans offensive line.
Atheist,
right now.
So that your faith has been shaken to atheism when it comes to the offensive line. Where's your faith with CJ Stroud right now?
I'm speaking in tongues. I'm a snake handler. You're still devout.
You're devout.
Yeah, I
CJ
am devout.
Stroud.
I am like almost to the lunatic fringe on it. Okay. I'm good with CJ. It's a slow start. They're trying to figure out exactly how to handle all these things. CJ bears responsibility for the run game as well. It's one of the challenges of a young quarterback is becoming more incorporated into the run game. He needs to be a taskmaster himself in some regards. I think Joe Mixon hopefully coming back will fix a little bit of that. But as far as CJ long-term and overall, yeah, I'm a faith healer.
Seriously devout with CJ Stroud.
Yeah.
D'Amico's been catching some over the last couple days from people wanting D'Amico to hold the offensive line more accountable, specifically Laremy Tunsil.
I burned them at the stake for I challenge them to a witch dunking, and then they'll burn them at the stake.
The people questioning D'Amico?
For questioning the power and authority of the church on this one,
okay.
Yes.
I like it.
I have consummate faith in D'Amico in this regard, and I do think that one of his challenges right now is that D'Amico 100% believes the church doctrine in his culture and everything that he preaches, but he's got this one member of his flock in Laremy Tunsil who, I don't know, maybe he donates the most money to the church. The coffers are full because of Laremy Tunsil.
He does.
And D'Amico's kind of stuck in this position where, like, all right, well, how do I handle the richest member of the congregation who's also just the least worthy? Yeah.
And D'Amico sees him on a daily basis, and he sees that he's not a bad person. He's worth saving, you know, like this Laremy
Tunsil.
But he
doesn't want to be saved.
Yeah.
But as far as my faith in D'Amico, yeah, I think it's just this is one of these the challenges that a young coach is going to have is you go through some blips like last week's game.
I got to tell you, I didn't see a witch dunking coming in this segment, but here we are. Yeah,
I'll put them on the wheel and see if they.
Where are you on your former position, the defensive line right now?
Defensive line, I feel good about. I think they just need to. They haven't finished their studying for their confirmation yet.
Okay.
What do you Catholics do when you get confirmed? Don't you have to go to don't you have to get ready for your confirmation somehow? You got to learn a bunch of stuff.
It just takes a really long time, man. I know that. I remember that. It takes a really long time. Yeah.
What do they do before a bar mitzvah? Don't you? You got to do a bunch of studying for you got to study the Torah and all that.
Yeah.
They're right there. They're right there. They're about ready for confirmation.
Okay.
But there's not quite. They gotta nail a couple of things before you can completely confirm them.
Yeah.
The one play, the touchdown throw to Jamar Jefferson, where I know people were upset that Eric Murray was covering Jamar Jefferson on that play. Did I call him Jamar? Justin Jefferson. Justin Jefferson. That Sam Darnold threw that ball 6.2 seconds after the snap.
That's a long time. Yeah.
Yeah, because the defensive line didn't contain Sam Darnold. It was one of my worries. It was one of my worries about that game was that there's a tendency to look at a guy like Sam Darnold, and I don't know why, Can't imagine the reason for it, but you underestimate his mobility. And there he goes, breaks out of the pocket, extends it, and throws a touchdown. Because you can't expect anybody to cover Justin Jefferson for 6.1 seconds.
Are you worried about that this weekend with Trevor Lawrence at all?
No. Yeah. No, I'm not. Okay. I think it'll be a good day for the defensive line.
Okay.
And I think, honestly, D'Amico, the numbers on Justin Jefferson's numbers when somebody challenged him near the line of scrimmage compared to when he didn't, when he had cushion versus when he didn't, was pretty glaring in that game.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised they were as careful with I don't want to say careful because it's almost like conceding that he's going to get a bunch of stuff underneath if you play Justin Jefferson with a big cushion. But I think they're good enough to be more aggressive than that.
Yeah, I agree with that. These are interesting texts we're getting. D'Amico seems very buddy-buddy with the players, less authoritarian. I'm guessing they see a different D'Amico than we do, like out of practice.
Yeah, I think he's very... I think D'Amico is the perfect balance between, like, hey, you don't have to be an a-hole to be a tough coach.
Right.
But you gotta hold guys accountable, and you gotta be very, very attentive to detail. And you have to be a taskmaster. You hear the stories from players like Aziz Alshire was saying when he was a young player, he used to butt heads with D'Amico all the time because D'Amico is just so demanding in terms of his expectations.
It's a good example.
I've told you before, Sean, too. Usually the toughest, the genuinely toughest coaches to play for in my career, there was almost zero correlation to their personality. I had some tough coaches who never raised their voice a single time, but they were so demanding in terms of their expectations and how hard they coached you on the finer aspects that it was brutal playing for them.
It felt, I had other
coaches that would MF you up and down who were horrible coaches because they were sloppy in their attention to detail themselves. So I don't worry about D'Amico's personality or how friendly he is with the players. I know that he holds them to a high standard.
Yep.
And it's just, I think he tries to handle guys on a case-by-case basis. Some guys respond to tough love. Other guys need to be coddled a little bit more, and you got to figure out who responds to what.
I agree. Most faith shaken about, this is a text message, my faith has been most shaken about the secondary out of position too much, and something isn't clicking with CJ. I'm not worried about CJ Stroud. Not yet. Three games in, I'm not worried about CJ Stroud. Now, I am worried that the offensive line might get him killed in a game this year. That part I'm worried. I'm worried for CJ Stroud. I'm not worried about CJ individual in a vacuum. I'm not worried about him as a player. Secondary out of position too much. Has your faith been shaken on the secondary?
I think some of that comes down to the play calling again. I think that they could have been more aggressive than they were in that game. And I think, look, when you're playing zone versus Justin Jefferson and the quarterback has time to throw, he's gonna find openings. He's gonna find spots. And the egregiously out of position stuff wasn't as bad in the second two games as it was in game one. So I'm not overly concerned about that. If anything, I think D'Amico can trust his secondary perhaps more than he did on Sunday. That game also got a little out of whack just because of the game flow of everything.
Yeah.
And the offense just continually shooting themselves in their own foot, that it put extra stress on the defense.
Many people pointing out this segment had a distinct Pope Zaza feel to it, that this wasn't Seth Payne necessarily doing this segment, but it was the venerable Pope Zaza doing this segment.
Pope Zaza would have been more, I should have either condemned people.
I was going to say, I think Pope Zaza would have been doing a lot more chastising, I think.
We've never really built up the Pope Zaza personality the way we probably should have. We had a good idea a while back. Part of it is that it was inspired by Laramie Tunsil's council, St. Omni. So we decided, okay, I need to come up with a name that's based on a religious position and a luxury hotel. And we came up with Pope Zaza.
Pope Zaza.
Yeah.
Love it. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Payne and Pope and Pendergast with you here on a Tuesday.
I'll get is one of those robes or something. We'll have to do a segment where I'm Pope Zaza and I rule on things.
You need the hat, too. The big...
I don't want to offend anybody's, religious faith or anything on too much level. So we'll try to do a hodgepodge from different religions.
All right.
I want one of those Ruthin Orthodox hats.
Yeah, yeah, something like that, I think. That would be
good. I'm guessing we have very few Russian Orthodox listeners.
No, but if you go to Amazon and put in Russian Orthodox hat, I guarantee you can have one at your house by 2 o'clock today.
Pretty quickly, yeah. Yeah.
All right, the Astros are trying to clinch a division. That is not the most important thing going on with the Houston Astros. This is. We will tell you what that is coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, we will power rank the power rankings at the top of the hour.
We do have at least one Russian Orthodox listener. He says, well, Seth, I'm one of your Russian Orthodox listeners, and there are quite a few of us. So I don't know. I'll have to go visit the... I'm going to have to go take in a service at this Russian Orthodox church.
Yeah.
If outsides are allowed. I have zero clue about how it all operates. But apparently I've got, this is good. You know, I love learning about people's faiths and their own little...
You do.
Their own little tweaks on the good word. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah,
that's nice. All right.
Let's do a remote.
I didn't know I was big in Russian Orthodoxy.
Yeah, let's do a remote at the Russian Orthodox church here in town. 6 a.m. Let's do it.
We could do that. We could do just start doing remotes at various churches around town, take in a little bit of the different... I like that. Boy, I enjoy communal things.
Yeah,
it's part of human nature.
Yep.
It's sometimes in this online world that we live in, whether it be faith based or not, just sometimes it's good to get around in a big group of people, you know, for wholesome purposes.
Yep.
Not to go down, you know, chase down Frankenstein or anything, but just a nice communal feel to things. Yeah.
Absolutely. Here's Joe's
Russian Orthodox Church. What if it? I don't want this to be something, though, that ends up, you know, I don't want to reevaluate things at this point in my life. What if it really speaks to me something?
And that would be a good
3
thing.
3 months from now, I've decided to leave my job because
well,
I need to
that.
Pursue the life of
no,
a...
No, don't do that. But if you feel like it strengthens your purpose, that's not a bad thing. But don't strengthen it to the point where you don't want to do this show anymore.
Okay.
Just a proper amount of strengthening of your... of your purpose in life. I think you're pretty good. I think you're good.
I remember I had that conversation with a guy a couple weeks ago who basically is in a, like, he basically gets into arguments with his pastor because his pastor, they sound like they're pretty fundamentalists with this church he goes to. His pastor doesn't think people should watch sports at all. But meanwhile, so my friend, who I'm, or not my friend, but this listener who I'm surprised even has a smartphone, he, like, would just, it sounds like he's kind of consuming sports radio in secret.
Oh, wow, because he, oh,
like,
man.
Against the, yeah, like, he has to hide it from his pastor.
Yeah. Like, he's committing major sins every Sunday by watching the Texans.
We are basically, you and I are basically Kevin Bacon and Footloose.
Yeah, kind
to this
of.
Kid.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. We're going to dance our asses off.
Mm-hmm.
The Astros, they lose last night to the Mariners. I'm not worried about them not winning the division yet. Now, Fromber loses tonight. We're going to come in with a different tone tomorrow. The magic number's 2. So we need a combination of an Astros win and a Mariners loss. And beating the Mariners either of the next 2 days accomplishes that. I am more worried right now about Yordan Alvarez than I am the Astros clinching the division. I don't know when that'll shift. I hope it doesn't. I hope they clinch it tonight. Here was Joe Espada yesterday before the game on Yordan Alvarez.
So, you know what? He's actually right now getting more tests done. He's got an MRI to start at 3 o'clock. So, we should be getting some more results here in the next hour. You know, yesterday we... You know, we got some x-rays and there was some inflammation in the area. So we want to make sure that we go in there and we check all the boxes. So he's getting some extra testing done right now. I spoke with him this morning and, you know, he woke up pretty sore. I was expecting him to, you know, praying that he felt better. But that wasn't the case. So, you know, we'll see once we get these results, once he walks in here.
No sugarcoating going on before the game. Like, he doesn't feel good. The knee doesn't feel good. They did the MRI, and here was Espada after the game yesterday.
Right knee sprained.
And what is his prognosis for the remainder of the regular season?
He will not be available for this series.
Okay, so the question becomes, and under this, you have to assume they win the division, okay? So I'm not putting the cart ahead of the horse. I'm merely analyzing this situation. Sprained knee, and to what degree? He just said sprained knee, so we don't know what degree it's sprained. But I will remind people the wild card round starts a week from today. A week from today is when the playoffs begin.
Yeah, and so a sprain could be anything from a torn ACL to a slightly minutely torn MCL or something. So something maybe you could play through, or maybe it's devastating. Sprain doesn't tell you a whole lot other than that it could be really, really bad.
Right.
So we have zero reason for optimism at this point. And I'm not even blaming the Astros for not giving out enough information or anything, but once the word sprain gets introduced into the equation, it could be really, really bad. And even if it's minor, it's something that could affect him. So I'm emotionally braced right now for Yordan very potentially not being available for the first series, and then I'm in denial about anything after
Yeah, man. And if he ain't available for the first series, it might not matter about a second series, because that wild card round is 2 out of 3. So you know, who knows? Espada just said he's not available for this series. If the Astros win tonight, then it doesn't matter if he's available for the Cleveland series, because it's all about the wild card. You know what I mean? Like, get the division clinched. And if they clinch the division, and I don't know what the magic number is for them to catch Cleveland, but I don't think they're catching Cleveland. Like, the Astros are going to be playing, in all likelihood, massive likelihood, they're going to be playing, they're going to be the 3 seed playing against the final wild card team. Yeah. Once they take care of their business in the next night or the next 2 days against Seattle, win 1 out of these 3 games, then it's all about getting your pitching lined up. It's about getting guys healthy. It's staying sharp.
Yeah, the interesting thing with Yordan is, in a 3-game series especially, is that, all right, let's say that it's a sprain and it's hard for him to play, but he goes out there and they DH him. Yordan has an effect on pitchers and defenses even when he's not hitting the ball well. We've seen Yordan when he's slumping, or at least his version of a slump where he's not hitting with power, where everybody's still got their heels at the very back of the dirt in the infield. All the outfielders are backed way the hell up.
He demands respect.
Right. So I think especially in a 3-game series where there's not enough time for people to really realize, like, okay, yeah, he's just not the same guy or what have you, that just having him out there at all could pay dividends. And it's gonna make it tough to manipulate, you know, who you move to DH and who's at first, et cetera, et cetera. But for a 3-game series, it doesn't matter as much.
No. Well, I mean, I would be shocked if when he comes back, he's running around in the outfield. So my guess is that if he does make it back,
It's
going to be as a DH. So he's going to be the DH. So that hurts your lineup flexibility. You know, if you get into the postseason and you want to start Caratini at catcher, I suppose you put Yiner at first base, but you're weakening yourself defensively at first base to keep Yiner's bat in the lineup, because you can't use DH because Yordan is using it. And you're probably having to start somebody in left field that is not a great... They don't have great offensive players other than Kyle Tucker in the outfield right now. So Yordan being pigeonholed into being a DH is a negative for this team in terms of the lineup flexibility that they have. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Let's get to the 9 o'clock hour. We talked about where our faith may have been shaken with the Texans. I think we're still feeling pretty good. How does the national media feel? The Texans were in the top 4 in every major power ranking that we use on 9 o'clock on Tuesdays when we power rank the power rankings. They were in the top 4 of all of them last week. How far did they fall due to the loss to the Minnesota Vikings? We power rank the power rankings coming up next.